to change.
Bringing you news and analysis of people's struggles
throughout Southwest Asia and Northern Africa.
Brought to you by Swana Collective,
KPFK Pacifica Radio,
90.7 FM in Los Angeles
and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara,
and streaming live
at kpfk.org. Afghanistan, Armenia, India, Iran,
Iraq, Israel, Kurdistan. Hello and welcome to Swana Region Radio, a weekly review of politics and culture, bringing you the voices of the voiceless from Kolkata to Casablanca. Here on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and 93.7 FM in Northern San Diego, as well as streaming worldwide on kpfk.org. My name is David Lloyd, and I'm a member of the South Asia, West Asia, and Northern Africa, or SWANA Collective, that brings you your weekly dose of SWANA Region Radio. Today, we consider the relationship between labor and Palestine solidarity. At its national convention in Baltimore this August, UE, the United Electrical Radio and Machine Workers Union, endorsed the worldwide BDS movement, boycott, divestment, sanctions, to pressure Israel to end its apartheid over the Palestinians, just as similar tactics helped to end South African apartheid in the 1980s. UE, the Electricians Union, represents more than 30,000 workers across the country in a range of private and public sector occupations, and is now the first U.S. national union to endorse BDS. Today, we will talk to Michael Letwin, co-founder of Labor for Palestine, about this remarkable victory for the BDS movement. We also discuss the progress being made on the cultural boycott and on the current campaign to persuade musician Kanye West to respect the Palestinian call for a cultural boycott of Israel by cancelling his planned September 30th concert in Israel. So our guest today is Michael Letwin. Michael's a public defender in Brooklyn, New York, and a veteran Vietnam anti-war, South Africa anti-apartheid, and racial justice activist since the 1960s. He's the former president of the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, UAW Local 2325, and a co-founder of New York City Labor Against the War, starting in 2001. He's co-founder of Labor for Palestine and Jews for Palestinian Right of Return. He's also affiliated with Al Ada New York, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition, and MENA Solidarity Network in the U.S., and, of course, he's a member of the organizing collective of the U.S. Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. Currently, together with Jews for Palestinian Right of Return, he's seeking to persuade Kanye West to respect the Palestinian call for a cultural boycott of Israel by canceling his planned September 30th concert in Israel. You can actually find and sign that petition at change.org, and we've posted a link to it at the show's website at kpfk.org for you to check in on later. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, let me first offer my condolences on the recent passing of your father, who was UCLA law professor and social justice activist Leon Letwin. I think Professor Letwin was well known to the KPFK community for his social justice work, his promotion of educational affirmative action, and not least, of course, for his support for Angela Davis, who's a longstanding KPFK, KPFA supporter, and also... He supported her when the Regents under Ronald Reagan fired her from her position at UCLA. In her recent tribute to him, Angela Davis remarked that if the lessons Leon taught us about organizing for social justice were invaluable 45 years ago, they are equally relevant today as we defend faculty members such as Stephen Salaita, who continue to come under attack for their divergent views. I did wonder, reading that, if your father had followed the case of Stephen Salaita, who was fired from a position at the University of Illinois last year, and that bears indeed some resemblance to the case of Angela Davis, and if you yourself have any comment about the lessons of your father's life and work in this current context we're all in.
Well, my dad was probably too ill to really follow Stephen Salaita's case over the last couple of years, but he did take a position in supporting Palestinian rights in over the years. And as Angela pointed out in that wonderful statement she wrote about him, the position that he took in defending her right to teach at UCLA in 1969 and 70, which is when then-Governor Reagan brought it under attack, was very much along the lines of defending Stephen Salaita. Because what she quoted him saying at that time in 1969 was something to the effect of, that you can't pretend to support diversity and to support affirmative action and to support the employment and the retention of what we would now call people of color at the university if you are going to prohibit them from expressing their outrage over racism and oppression, which was some of the terms that were used to attack Angela Davis back then, and certainly is the claim for why it was okay by some people's claim, why it was okay to fire Stephen Salaita from University of Illinois. Because what he was specifically fired for was using intemperate language to protest the Gaza war on Twitter. And it was interesting that in pulling out the quote that Angela did for my dad from 1969, it very much addresses exactly that kind of situation. So there's really no doubt in our minds that had my dad been able to, by reasons of health, he would have been very active in supporting Stephen Salaita.
Well, indeed, it's one of those questions where labor issues actually intersect very clearly with academic freedom issues insofar as his contract was reneged upon for actually expressing rights that we generally consider as protected under academic freedom and beyond that, just general constitutionally protected freedom of speech. So it does seem to have all these resonances at a time when donors and other people who influence the universities are increasingly exerting pressure on people to keep their silence. And in that respect, I think we all very much honor your own father's very, very outspoken record. Yesterday, the LA Times published his obituary a little belatedly, but you're quoted in it as saying, "The idea we grew up with was that you should stand for what you believe in." And I have to say, I know that you have certainly stood up for a number of social justice issues, both nationally and internationally, and are very involved right now in Palestine solidarity work. So I wanted to ask you, what led you in the first place to begin to support, first of all, of course, Palestine solidarity, and then later BDS?
Well, you know, I can't really take credit for having been an activist over a long period of time, because that really came from my parents and my grandparents. I'm a third generation activist. My grandparents on both sides had been in the Russian Revolution, and then on both sides, my parents became activists in this country. And I then became an activist as a result of that, as well as the times I grew up in, which is the 1960s and early 70s. As far as Palestine in particular was concerned, I was very, as many people were at that time, very attuned and took a lot of leadership from the Black Liberation Movement. And the Black Liberation Movement, much of it at least, including groups like the Panthers and SNCC, were at the forefront of supporting and defending Palestinian rights and understanding and recognizing that Palestinian struggle is really one of so many anti-colonial, anti-imperial struggles around the world, and it was in that context that they supported it. So just as you would support, or they would say, just as you would support the Vietnamese liberation movement at that time, or the South African anti-apartheid movement, or any other number of anti-colonial movements around the world, so the Palestinian movement was exactly part of that same struggle. And so I became first aware of it in the late 60s and early 70s in that context, as did, I think, a number of people involved in the movements of that time. And so at various points in the subsequent decades, I've been active in supporting Palestine. And I think most consistently and most intensively in the period since 2001, because since 9/11, Palestine has more than ever been at the forefront, I think, for opposing the so-called international war on terror and the entire program of domination of the Middle East and beyond that the United States and the Israeli regime share and are allied in. And by the same token, the Palestinian movement, first in the first Intifada in the late 80s, and then into the 90s and the 2000s, the second Intifada, has been very much opposed to and at the cutting edge of being opposed to that kind of imperialism. And so I think many people have realized that it would be essential to support that, to show solidarity for Palestine in that context.
So let me just draw out two things that I think are really important in what you're saying there. I mean, the first is the long legacy of Black social movement engagement with Palestine, which is showing up again at the moment, both in the really very, very wonderful support for a letter that was circulated among Black intellectuals, scholars, activists, and so forth, that a number of the most prominent black activists have signed recently, and of course also in the kind of relationships that have struck up between Black Lives Matter and the Palestinians, and so forth. And then the second thing is just how central Palestine has proven to be as an issue to a wider condition of the Middle East, where indeed some would argue that the wars that have been fought in the Middle East have been very much generated out of concern for Israel's security, out of the idea that Israel is surrounded and threatened, rather than the idea that Israel is itself the colonial power that is surrounding and threatening the Palestinians. So I wonder if you would comment just a little bit more on the relationship between the Palestinian situation and your own anti-war activism over the years.
Well, so again, focusing particularly on post 9/11, you know, the anti-war movement grew actually fairly rapidly. First against the war in Afghanistan and right after 9/11, and some of us, for example, in New York City, against labor against the war that was established right after 9/11, and others, you know, took up those kinds of issues. And very quickly it became clear, this is still during during the Second Intifada, and one of the things that happened right after 9/11 was that the Israeli regime ruthlessly exploited 9/11 in order to demonize even further the Palestine liberation movement by equating it with so-called terrorism, just as the United States was using 9/11 as a pretext for wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and so forth. And so it really, it became clearer, I think, to many people that it would not be possible to effectively oppose U.S. war and domination of post 9/11 without opposing the Zionist state in Israel and the role it played in supporting and encouraging those wars. And by the same token, if you thought that people in those regions had the right to resist their oppression and resist colonialism, then certainly that had to apply at least as much to Palestinians as anyone else. And on top of that, Palestinians have a very long and impressive history of resistance going all the way back to certainly the 1920s and 1930s against colonialism and then Zionism. So these are really inseparable issues. Now, that wasn't the view of everybody in the anti-war movement, however, coming out of 9/11. There were different wings of the movement, and some wings of the movement, for example, didn't even want to oppose the war in Afghanistan, only became active in opposition to the war in Iraq. And some of those forces, even when they came out against the war in Iraq, didn't necessarily want to touch Palestine, either because they didn't really oppose the idea of a Jewish state in historic Palestine with inequality for Palestinians, or because even if they thought that they did, they weren't prepared to say so out of expediency. And so there were struggles in the anti-war movement. I was on the national leadership of both UFPJ, United for Peace and Justice, and U.S. Labor Against the War that was founded in early 2003, where those organizations were hesitant, if not unwilling, to take a position in support of Palestinian rights. And so these became issues that have were not, that the anti-war movement was not united on, but which some of us, at least, and many of us, increasing numbers of us, I think now, have taken a very clear position that these are not separable. They are inseparable. And if you oppose oppression and you support if you support resistance to injustice, then you must support Palestine. And I think we see that. And interestingly, it's not so much because of arguments that some of us may have made toward that effect, but rather because the Israeli regime itself continually discredits itself, just delegitimizes itself. And nothing is clearer than in that regard than the war it continually wages on Gaza.
Well, indeed, I was just going to return to the question that I mentioned at the very beginning of the show, which is that this August, immediately in the wake of the latest assault on Gaza by Israel, the United Electrical, Radio and Machine Workers endorsed the worldwide BDS movement. Irrespective of whether it was arguments or Gaza that pushed this decision, this is, I mean, surely a momentous victory for BDS to have actually got a national U.S. union to endorse it. And I wondered if you were involved in the organizing effort that brought that endorsement about and know what it took to actually get to this outcome.
It is amazingly good news, and it should be said in the interest of accuracy that actually the UE is the second national union in this country. The first was the Industrial Workers of the World, I believe, in 2010. Now, they're not as mainstream a union as the UE, but they do deserve credit for having that, you know, taking that position earlier on. And, no, I was not directly involved in the UE effort, but what I've tried to do, along with others, is to organize back in 2004 Labor for Palestine, which is a network, an inter-union network, which has tried to encourage the sort of thing that the UE now has just done. And the UE actually comes at the end of a year or a year after some very important victories that led to, I think, the UE vote. One was the vote by the UAW 2865 graduate students across University of California to endorse the BDS movement
back
in December.
That was tremendous, yes.
And that was, in fact, cited in the UE resolution as a precedent. So that, I, you know, hooray for that, because they really helped bring this about. And at the same time, at around the same time as the UAW vote was going on or coming up, was the Block the Boat and other efforts to stop Zimline ships from being unloaded in California ports, especially in Oakland. And the respect for that picket line that the ILWU, Local 10 workers, the dock workers in Oakland, gave to that movement. So that what that meant, what that has meant, is that those back in August of 2004 and 2014 rather, and then subsequent to that, subsequent months, Zim ships were unable to unload and have not been able to unload since that time. In fact, it's not even tried to in Oakland or in Los Angeles. And that's really going beyond even the resolutions that UAW or UE have passed, because great as those resolutions are, with the ILWU Local 10, we're talking about industrial action. And it's very much related to the resolutions that various people have passed, but that's really the kind of direct industrial action that makes a concrete difference. And so all these efforts, I think, have built off each other. And interestingly, I think all of them come largely in response to various waves of the unrelenting Israeli war in Gaza, which has taken so many lives, including last summer, not this past summer, but the 2014 summer, which took 2,200 lives in Gaza, including more than 500 children. And that was cited directly by, for example, the ILWU Local 10 workers in refusing to unload those ships. It was cited very directly by the UAW 2865 vote, and now it's been cited by the UE resolution. So it's not that Gaza is the only issue of Palestine. It's one very important tier of oppression that goes all the way back to at least 1948 and the founding of the Israeli state. But Gaza is emblematic in a most brutal way of what the Israeli regime is about.
Well, this very important what you say about the ILWU. I do remember having been involved as a young professor in Berkeley back in the day, that the Longshoremen's Union in the Bay Area was absolutely crucial to the work we were doing against South African apartheid in the 1980s, you know, at Berkeley and other universities around there, precisely because they brought that kind of direct action pressure to bear and under certain circumstances. And also, of course, I think raised the specter of further labor action, which is also always a very important thing. And I did wonder, since I believe you also worked with the UAW 2865, the Graduate Students Union at UC, what future do you see for collaborations that have happened before, as in the case of anti-South African apartheid movements? What future do you see for collaboration between labor unions and faculty and student organizing against Israel's apartheid system?
Well, I think 2865 is a really good example of that, because 2865, the UAW vote, I think was inspired obviously by a lot of things. Partly it was to condemn the war in Gaza, obviously, but also it was directly inspired by the attempts by students, the successful attempts by Students for Justice in Palestine and others to win divestment resolutions on UC campuses over the last few years, and which have been tremendously successful. I'm sure you know more about that than I do, being a UC professor. But that, a lot of the 2865 members were actually involved in supporting those kinds of divestment efforts by
That's
the
correct,
SDPs
yeah.
and the student governments. And so by the time their vote came up in December of 2014, the UAW vote, that had been very much an inspiration and something that they could connect into. So I think that's the clearest example I can think of where student organizing, and the SJPs in particular, have had a very major effect on encouraging labor action. I'm sure also that many SJP activists were involved in the 2014 Block the Boat related activities in Oakland and elsewhere to stop the Zim ships from coming. So clearly, there's a lot of connections between student activism, and I think the SJPs in general play a critically important role. And now we see also, as you mentioned, the connection with Stephen Saliva's free speech fight to win back his job, which is not simply a student thing, but it's certainly an academic campaign as well as a labor campaign.
And it's interesting because, I mean, Gaza obviously is the most extreme version of this, but we're also seeing Israel itself become more draconian and its supporters become more and more censorious in the ways that they're treating discussions of Israel. Stephen Salida is perhaps the tip of the iceberg there, but there have been movements here and around the country to try to suppress free speech, critical speech about Israel in the name of its anti-Semitism. So There's a peculiar way in which Israel's own hardening and retrenchment is actually producing counter effects by organizing people against it. And
I think that, you know, clearly it's like any other situation of oppression. It's usually the oppressor that organizes the oppressed in that sense. I mean, obviously things can't be done spontaneously, but that kind of repression or attempt at repression is a double-edged sword for the practitioner, because as in the case of Stephen Salida, what it's done in that situation is to draw even more attention to Zionist oppression, to censorship, to those kinds of things, and therefore people react and organize against it. So they're kind of in a situation as far as there's no way to put that genie back in the bottle of speaking out against the oppression of Palestine. And I think, by the way, it's very interesting that both that the UAW resolution and the 2865 resolution, both in the two important labor resolutions that have happened in the last year, both of them are quite radical in identifying the issue not simply as a matter of the 1967 occupation, but to critique and criticize the very nature of the Zionist state and the kind of apartheid inequality that inherently goes along with that, and to fully support the BDS call, not only, again, to end the occupation, as important as that is, but to support the right of equality for Palestinians with Israeli citizenship and to fully support the Palestinian right of return, which really is the by far the most long-standing and far-reaching of the demands.
Well, Michael, speaking of that pressure and of the three demands, we are both involved in U.S. ACBI, the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. And I know you're particularly active on the cultural boycott front at the moment. Can you remind listeners of how that cultural boycott is progressing, what victories it's won, and also tell them just a little bit about the Kanye West petition that's being circulated at the moment?
Certainly. Well, you know, over the last number of years, as the boycott movement has grown, because now it's been 10 years since the call came from Palestine for an all-out boycott, or at least a modern boycott, there have been a growing number of cultural figures who have refused to perform either in or for apartheid Israel. And those include now Stevie Wonder, Lauryn Hill, and a whole range, Roger Walters from Pink Floyd, a whole number of people who have taken that position. And it's sometimes come with a fight. Sometimes the artists have to really be made aware that this is no different than performing in apartheid South Africa. And there was, as you know, a very strong cultural component to that boycott and was focused around Sun City at that time. This is now going back 30 and 40 years
ago. I remember it well.
Yeah. And, you know, there were a large number of many artists who refused to perform in South Africa at that time, although it also should be said that there were always people who crossed the picket line. People like Frank Sinatra or even Ray Charles who played in apartheid South Africa. But there were many more people who refused and a growing number who refused, and that played a very important symbolic role in educating the world about the need to oppose apartheid and support liberation in Southern Africa. And the same approach is being taken in regard to the cultural boycott of apartheid Israel. And so what's happened is that as artists announce that they're going to perform in apartheid Israel, there's a call from U.S. ACBI and other organizations around the world not to do that. and there are petition campaigns and so forth, and sometimes artists, more quickly than others, back off. Sometimes they don't back off at all. Right now we have a campaign to stop Kanye West from going. Kanye West, who speaks out as somebody who presents himself as somebody who opposes oppression and is very aware of black oppression in this country and elsewhere, and yet who is somehow inexplicably going to play in an apartheid regime in Israel. So the hope is that by generating enough signatures and enough noise, that he will find the courage or the conscience to cancel his performance. But I think it's also important to remember that, again, for the Israeli state, it's a no-win situation, because even those performers who do not succumb to pressure and who do go to perform there, who cross the picket line, even those performers and the campaign to stop them from doing so creates greater awareness. And in that sense, the Israeli regime does not benefit either way, because even when someone goes, they go under this cloud and they go after a campaign to educate others. And so it's very important, and we do urge people to call on Kanye West to sign the petition and to join the kind of campaigns to stop other performers from doing the same.
Well, Michael, I'm afraid that's all the time we have, but we are linking to the petition at change.org on the site for our show, which is at kpfk.org, and you just go to programs and find Swana Region Radio. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thanks for having
me. Appreciate
talking
to you. My guest today has been Michael Letwin, longstanding social justice activist, a public defender in New York, and co-founder of Labor for Palestine. He's currently working on a campaign to persuade Kanye West to respect the Palestinian call for a cultural boycott of Israel by canceling his planned September 30th concert in Israel. We've linked to the petition at change.org on the site for our show. That's all the time we have on our show today. The Swana Collective would like to thank our guest, Michael Letwin, and as always, to D'Angelo for engineering assistance. All our shows are available to download at kpfk.org. My name is David Lloyd of the South Asia, West Asia, and Northern Africa, or Swana Collective, and on behalf of all our collective members, I'd like to wish our listeners a great day.
Afghanistan,
Algeria,
Armenia,
Egypt,
India,
Iran,
Iraq,
Israel,
Kurdistan,
Lebanon,
Pakistan,
Palestine, Syria,
Turkey,
Jordan.
Welcome to Radio Intifada.
Voices from Calcutta to Casablanca.
Voices of struggle.
Voices for change.
Bringing you news and analysis of people's struggles
throughout Southwest Asia and Northern Africa.
Brought to you by Swana Collective,
KPFK Pacifica Radio,
90.7 FM in Los Angeles,
and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara,
and streaming live
at kpfk.org.
Afghanistan,
Armenia,
India,
Iran, Syria. Hey everybody, I'm Eric Mann. I'm the host of Voices from the Frontlines, along with my partner, Tammy Bang Lu. We're on every Tuesday at 4, and I want to tell you what's different about our show. Voices from the Frontlines is about people doing work. Farm workers, bus riders, black and Latino communities, immigration issues. If you want to be an activist or even an organizer, the show for you is Voices from the Frontlines, every Tuesday at 4 o'clock with Eric Mann and Tammy Bang Lu. I'll see you next Tuesday at 4.
Hi, this is Jamie Cromwell. You are listening to 90.7 FM KPFK Los Angeles and 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
My legs are tired.